This is one of the most exciting episodes of Be Right. We had a great conversation with Charles Barkley. We talked all things with Charles, whether he gambles on golf, gambling stories in general, how he's having fun on the golf course yet again. You definitely need to listen to the entire Sir Charles interview. And of course, we got a pretty comprehensive breakdown of Colonial. But first, William Hill deserves a shout out for their continued support of the Be Right podcast and all the gambling content at golfdigest.com, which of course you need to go check out. Our betting expert picks column with Pat Mayo, Brandon Gadula, Lee Aldrich, an anonymous caddy, and Rick Gaiman, and Rick's DFS column on golfdigest.com as well as live. But if you're doing any betting on golf or any sport for that matter, because it's such a great time in sports right now, check out the juicy signup bonus that William Hill is offering, a free bet up to $500, depending on where you live. Use the promo code GolfDigestRF at signup. That's for new users only, and you must be 21 or older or physically present in one of William Hill states to take advantage. The risk-free bet will be credited as a free bet within 3 business days. Terms and conditions apply. So with that, have a listen to this week's Charles Barkley episode of Be Right.
Welcome back to Be Right, presented by William Hill. I'm Alex Myers. As always, I'm joined by Stephen Hennessy, Christopher Powers. And this week we have, I mean, we always say it's a special guest, but this is really the most special guest we've ever had. I've been trying to get this guy on various podcasts for many, many years. He's not exactly a golfer. I mean, he plays a lot, but Charles Barkley, I mean, a total legend. We were so excited to be joined by Charles Barkley. We talked a little about the PGA, but we talked some basketball. We talked some other stuff, some good golf gambling stories and everything else. So we got our chat with Charles Barkley coming up. You do not want to miss that. Speaking of not wanting to miss anything, that PGA Championship was certainly an all-time instant classic. Phil Mickelson taking down Brooks Koepka and everyone else. Just an incredible week. I still really can't believe it. And I know we were talking about it, guys, from a betting perspective. I mean, everybody was focused on him being the oldest major champ ever. And certainly that's amazing. He's going to turn 51 next week, but he's actually one of the biggest underdogs in major championship history, at least recent major championship history. I know we all talked about it. You really have to go back to 2004 British Open, Todd Hamilton, 500-1 to find a longer shot, because 2005 US Open, Michael Campbell was actually technically listed as part of the field. So I mean, there might've been some crazy books out there where you could get a shot on him and he might've been higher than Phil, but Phil was 200-1 to 300-1. And I know at least one person on DraftKings made 300 grand, Steve. I know you made some cash. You didn't make 300 grand, but tell us about your success.
Yeah, I didn't make 300 grand. And, you know, I know for all the sports books, you know, it was a tough week for them. I think it was a five figure loss. Yeah. I mean, you know, you think of all the people just throwing $5, $10 down on Phil, that all adds up. So we're all kicking ourselves for not doing it. And I definitely am, especially because I bet on Phil at the Wells Fargo, which, you know, the tournament before that he played.
I forgot about that.
Oh yeah. The whole weekend I kept just agonizing about it. But like Powers and I said in our show on Friday night, you know, you were rooting for history as a golf fan, and that was definitely true. And thankfully I ended up winning money regardless, totally unexpectedly, as Powers knows. This was the second major pool in a row that I won that his buddy runs, Gordo, our guy from ESPN. And you know, the way it's set up, it's just like everyone scores each day. They all add up instead of finishing position. So I had Abraham Answer, Justin Rose, which is hilarious because I was telling Powers how much I thought his Justin Rose bets were bad, but I threw him in the pool just to kind of hedge my own terrible take. And Patrick Reed, who had an amazing weekend. So, you know, those guys together, I was in like, I think 15th place going into Saturday in this pool, and then ended up winning. So, yeah, I mean, a total of, well, I guess I shouldn't say the amount, but it was a nice amount.
Very nice.
And the best part I'll just say is that Powers and I went and played golf Wednesday, as you know, Myers. And so this was like the least amount of time I put into building, you know, all my pools, all my DraftKings lineups, bets, et cetera. So, very unexpected. And
the way to win this pool is to pick total losers who are 10 back on Sunday morning. have no pressure, go out in perfect conditions,
yep,
and shoot 65. That is the way to win it. Same with Justin Rose. And it happened. And I do remember this happened at Wingfoot. I had Matthew Wolf and Bryson in this pool, and I lost by like 10 shots.
That's insane.
Because whoever had somebody on Sunday that actually did okay, or Saturday, right, whatever it was. So it's a, you know, and Gordon kind of admitted it, I think, in our text messaging on the other day that, but I don't know, I guess it's going to stay. And I'm going to keep suckering myself into it because it's big money. Obviously, Steve knows that. He's won it twice.
You shouldn't cry too much, Paris, about the U.S. Open. You did win another
pool. I did, yeah. I did win the other Steve's buddies pool for that. So, yeah, I'm not going to cry too much. But it was, you know, a little strange to have the guys that finished first and second and lose a pool, especially with Wolf, who, you know, no one really had in Bischoff's, in Steve's buddy's pool or in Gordon's pool that week. But that was, you know, two majors ago. We're talking about the PGA right now.
Crazy week. I think it's a great format.
Yeah, Steve loves the format, obviously. I'm going to try and, I guess, the Rose thing is hilarious. And that's another one we were talking on the way to the course we played, which I'll get to in a second, last Wednesday. And I mentioned Rose to my buddy in the car. He was in the passenger See, and he is the ultimate, I think we've mentioned this before, he's the ultimate guy. Like if you bet on the Giants and they're down 7-0, he's like, oh, great bet. Bet's over. You lost already. It's like first quarter. He's already like killing you. And I mentioned Rose, top 20 in the car. I mentioned Zalatoris, top 10, top 20, all those hit. And he texted me Sunday saying, nice top 30 bet on Thomas Peters you told me to do. So all this kid does is focus on the negative. So I'm glad Steve's giving me a little credit for the Rose call. But yeah, we played Saucon Valley last Wednesday, Myers. That's where we were at. Kind of snuck off.
I heard.
Decent, we kind of snuck spot off. So it was a nice start to the week. We got to give a shout out. We told them we would at dinner to my buddy's Uncle Tony Martini of the McMahon Martini and Gallagher Law Firm. So a nice hearty shout out to him for an incredible day and an incredible kickoff to a PGA week that literally felt like it took place, you know, like a year ago last Thursday. I tweeted this out the other day, but remember when Corey Connors was leading last Thursday?
Seems like a year ago. Yeah.
A year ago.
It two feels shot like
you had a two shot lead,
played one of the rounds of the week, and 4 days later, Phil Mickelson wins. So it was pretty mid. I'll just say about, you know, obviously odds wise, long shot, total long shot, but this is not your typical Todd Hamilton. This is a legend that,
right,
you know, had just had crappy results and kind of fell all the way down there to 200-1. So it is a long shot hit. Congrats to the people who, you know, I'm sure there's people who bet on Phil every week, you know, a couple bucks, like Steve said. So I'm jealous that I wasn't one of them. Cause I had, you know, as you guys know, I had Brooks, I had Oosthuizen, I had Gary Woodland, I had Keegan, I had Hovland, who were two back
and surrounded.
It doesn't really matter when they finish in second. So yeah, brutal week. But like you guys both have said, it's okay when a legend kind of wins. I'm sure we had the Masters surrounded when Tiger won too, the leaderboard, and it's the rare time you're kind of okay with, you know, missing out on a big hit.
I did not have the leaderboard surrounded. My picks were terrible. Although, I mean, Zalatoris showed some life. Cantley made that run on Sunday, of course, as soon as he sniffed it, missing putts left and right. I mean, he could have easily posted 5 under.
His approach play was like the best out of anyone going into the weekend. So, you know, you thought he was going to make a run in
16 hole. Everyone's getting there in two. Like you gotta post.
He did get there in two, and then he three putted. Then he three-putted.
Yes, you're right. You gotta post and 5 under where he was.
13, he actually went right of the flag on 13. Team with the water there. He had a 6 foot putt for birdie. I mean, it was like 3 feet from the water and 6 feet from the hole, and he bricked it. I mean, he was right there. So he actually gave me a little excitement. Of course, I mean, I got to be honest, I was rooting for Phil. I know we all had our bets and everything else, but it's just such an incredible story. As we all, you know, we're in the content business. He is the content king. He is. Everything is lighting up across the board. He's got people talking about golf. Although you go to the front page of ESPN today, he's already gone. And the only golf that's there is the Brooks Koepka, Bryson eye roll, which was insane last night. CP jumped on that late for us. That thing went around. I mean, we should mention that. It really seems like these guys hate each other. I mean, it's just, and I think it's great for golf. I mean, to be honest,
we are, you know, I lost a bunch of money betting, but we're all winners. The game of golf on this fine Tuesday afternoon with the content that, that has been provided.
Now we need the US Open. We need the USGA to please pair them the first couple of rounds of Torrey Pines. That would just be
totally
electric. Cause like you said, Myers, like, you know, we're in the content business and it's great for golf. Like the amount of eyeballs that that would get. And, you know, golf hasn't really had that villain, you know, type thing, you know, Tiger and Phil, probably the closest to it. And, but this, you know, they didn't like each other. That's a fact, Phil and Tiger, but this seems like, dude, I hate your guts. I want to beat you up. There's even odds now. If there was like a charity boxing match, who would win? I think Brooks is minus 150 at some site, sportsbetting.ag. I don't even know if that's legit, but amazing.
Yeah, we've used that site before when we want to stretch something, Steve. So, I don't know if it's legit or not, but we like when we get some fun odds, some fun bets. They do that. Unfortunately, you know, we didn't get to ask Charles Barkley about the whole Bryson Brooks thing because he would have been perfect to talk about feuds. You know, the Shaq feud, he even brought up Shaq right away when we started. You know, they go at it on TV. I know he used to get into it with my man Charles Oakley back in the day, even with Jordan, his boy, on the court, they used to tussle. So he you know, he gets into it with Draymond Green. He loves feuds. So I would have liked to hear his take on this. But we did get to hear his take on a lot of other things. Again, we're just very excited to have Charles Barkley as a guest. It was the most electric Zoom call of my life, for sure. So please have a listen to our chat with the one and only Charles Barkley. All right, we're excited. We're thrilled. We're honored to welcome NBA legend, TNT analyst Charles Barkley to the show. Charles, thanks for coming on today, man. How are you doing?
Man, I'm doing great. The playoffs start today, so my life is interesting and fun for the next 2 months.
For sure. Well, we'll definitely get into that in a minute, but, you know, we got to start with the viral videos that went around, I believe it was last week, of you crushing it off the tee, looking fantastic. The hitch is gone. What's going on? You know, I know you've been giving Stan Utley some credit, but how exciting is it to be playing the golf that you know you're capable of again?
It's fun. It's a lot of fun. I'm not going to lie. You know, I basically quit playing golf for like the last 25 years because it wasn't fun. I only celebrity events for my friends and things like that.
Right.
And I mean, listen, nobody wants to play golf and suck at it. So I really quit playing for like the last 25 years. And so a couple of years ago, I was at a Tom Lehman's golf tournament and Stan says, "Hey man, Chuck, you're struggling. Let me work with you." I said, "Stan, I don't work with every teacher in the world, blah, 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 blah." He says, "Well, one more is not gonna hurt you." And I says, "That's actually a good point." And he says, "They tell me you used to be a really good player. What happened?" I says, "Stan, I was a good player. You know, I was going to shoot between 78 and 85, depending on how well you played that day." And I said, "I want to get better." So I started taking lessons from every Tom, Dick, and Harry in the world. And then when I was standing over the ball, I had like 10 guys talking to me at the same time. Right. "Oh, is this Butch? Is this Hank? Right. Is this Rick Smith? I'm like, is this a, or like?" So I had like 10 guys talking to me at a time. And then so Stan says, "Hey, listen, let's simplify this. Don't think about it. Just work on what I want you to work on." And we spent like 4 or 5 hours together the first day, and the next day, same thing. And there's been a progression in the last year and a half. And I'm actually playing, like, I'm not scoring as well as I scored before because I'm having one blow-up hole. Or, well, okay. I had two yesterday. Two ass holes. But I'm hitting the ball better than I ever hit it in my life, to be honest with you.
That's great.
And that's the thing. Like, I'm hitting shots that I didn't even know was possible. But I still got to learn how to score. That's the thing he's working with me on now, and my short game.
Right. Well, I got to ask you then. I know you're doing something with Aleve. and Max Homa's doing his roast, his swing with you, but there's not as much to roast now, but you can tell us about what you're doing with Max and with Aleve.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. It's called Aleve X. It's a topical solution. And first of all, the best thing about it, I get to go against Shaq, which is really, hey, when they said Aleve X and they said it's going to be a topical solution, I'm like, is that like competition for Icy Hot? And I'm like, oh yeah, I'm in. I actually met Max probably 3 years ago and just said hello. We were playing, he was doing something and I was doing it for Gary McCord. And we said hello and blah, blah, blah. He actually asked me for a basketball tip and he was wrong. And when you talk to him, tell him he was wrong. I told him that the Memphis Grizzlies, I think it was, were gonna win the game. He says, and so roast his ass. I said, that's a bad matchup for the Phoenix Suns. And the Grizzlies won the game that night, so he owes me.
I assume you're, now that you're playing better, you must be playing all the time now. You're playing every day. I know you got, work here and there, but.
So the best thing about my job, we don't go to work till 8 o'clock at night. So to answer your question, I'm playing every freaking day right now. Yes. Number one, it's fun. Like I said, I went, 20 years where I played Tahoe and I would embarrass myself, but that Tahoe is the best week of our lives if you want to go somewhere. And I played for other friends of mine who asked me to play in their celebrity event and help them raise money for charity. So like I said, I went from playing 10 times a year, now I'm playing every single day. So, like I said, the cool thing about my job, we don't go to work till 8 o'clock. We work from 8 to 2 in the morning. So I'm playing every day right now.
That's amazing. How much, I think I heard you say in a video with John Daly that you're back to a 12. And is your confidence now that are you playing for a little money? We heard Ricky Fowler talk about at the PGA that what actually helped him prepare was playing MJ for some money at the Grove. Are you in any of these big games yet? Are you feeling that confident about the game yet?
Yeah. Well, first of all, drinking, smoking, and gambling are the three reasons you play golf. hey, it's always some form. It's 1, 2, or 3. Most of the time, it's all three.
Oh yeah.
And the good thing about it, man, I'm playing with old jocks, and we're all has-beens. And so the only thing that we could do exciting is play golf, and we got to gamble, we got to drink and smoke some cigars. But yeah, I feel very good about my game right now as far as betting. I'm gonna win some, I'm gonna lose some, but I feel very good when I step out there that we're gonna have that I can compete.
Do you ever bet on the PGA Tour?
No. It's so funny. I got idiot friends who do that. And I was like, man, the chance of you picking one guy out of 40 guys who gonna win a golf tournament 1 week. Anybody who, I'm sitting here, we got it on in the background. Any person who said they had Phil Mickelson going this week is full of they are 100. And actually, even Louis Oosti said, he played well in the team event, but nobody picked him going into the week. And especially Brooks Koepka, because he's playing on one leg right now.
Right.
So if anybody told you they had one of those three guys, they're full of
right.
If I did, it'd be one of those things where you get to pick X amount of guys.
Okay.
But the notion that you're going to pick one guy who's going to win a tournament is to me is almost impossible.
Yeah. Well, obviously it sounds like you keep up with the tour. I know you're a fan and you got a chance to play with Phil Mickelson in the match. How cool was that? What were you able to learn from him? And he's another guy who had been spreading the word about how good of a golfer you used to be. So he knew what you were capable of, I think.
Well, you know, Phil called me because I've known Phil for a long time, because when I played for the Suns, his wife, Amy, was a dancer.
Right.
So I've known Phil
30 years. Yeah.
Longer than that.
Oh, longer.
I've been retired for 20. I played my last 4 years in Houston. So I met Phil probably right at 30 years ago, my first year. So that was 28 years ago when I got traded to the Suns.
Right.
And so I met Phil back then. So we've been together. And listen, we played the, and Phil is a number one, he's a great player. He's a good person. But so he wanted to be prepared for the match, So he's like, hey, I'm flying down for the day to play the course. I'm like, yo, man, it's Thanksgiving. he's like, yeah, I'm flying in the day before. I'm gonna fly a couple of days away. He said, I want you, and I had to drive like 2 hours up to Tucson. I'm like, hey, if you're gonna fly in just for the day to play golf, let's do it. And I played really, really well with it. So we were ready and we were prepared. But yeah, but he says, hey, the match is Thursday. I'm gonna fly in Tuesday, meet me. I'm like, yo, man, it's Thanksgiving. He's like, yeah, no, but we need to see the course. Cause I drove up and he flew in and we played a great practice round. So we were ready for the match.
Yeah.
We were really ready for it.
You've played with everybody over the years, athletes, celebrities, just a guy that it maybe an NBA guy, maybe a coach, not named Steph Curry. Obviously we know how good he is at golf and he's going to be playing golf, starting next week after last night, but, just like, well,
if I know Steph, he's playing right now. he's not going to wait till next week. He's playing golf right now.
True. Yeah. Just like, so my question is a sneaky guy, not named Curry, not named Iguodala, that, you know, can really play, that you've come across.
You know, we got some really good, Ray Allen, Penny Hardaway.
Penny, wow, okay.
Oh, yeah, those guys who are really, really good players. I mean, I think they might right now be the two best NBA players. Steph is in the conversation, too, as far as, like, really, really good. Guys who like, wow, they can really play, who love the game. I never actually played with Iguodala. I know he loves the game, but man, but Ray Allen, Penny Hardaway, Marshall Faulk. Marshall Faulk is a hell of a player. Vince Coleman, another good friend of mine. These guys, I mean, you know, like, man, we play, living in Arizona, we play a lot. And, but it's always cool when you play. You know, the last couple of weeks in the pro-am, I played with David Toms one day because they had a senior major at my course in Alabama. Then last week I played with John Daly because they were here in Atlanta. So anytime you get to play with one of these pro guys, man, it's pretty special. I mean, because you're like, damn.
Right.
Yeah, damn. But playing with David Toms and John Daly in the last 2 weeks has been like cool for me.
Yeah. What, you know, obviously we've heard stories, you've told stories about how much of a maniac MJ is with the gambling on the course. Is there anybody else who's kind of in his league in terms of wanting to make bets on the course?
First of all, there's nobody in this league. There's no his type of money. Let's get that.
That's right. That's true.
Yeah,
it's good.
Yeah. Michael's on a whole nother level. he's my only billionaire friend, just for the the other guys are just gambling. He's like really gambling. But no, it's interesting though. He is like for real. Like we go on vacation and we play like 54 holes. We play 54 holes. And like everybody was in like the first day and everybody's in like the second day. And after that, we just totally freaking exhausted. And this dude is a maniac. Like he never sleeps. He can play like every single day, all day long. And I mean, he is the most interesting guy when it comes to like, yo, man, we're all tired and you're like still going. So it's crazy.
One of your big guarantees this year, I believe, was the Wizards to make the playoffs. And my buddy Alex here is a big Russell Westbrook hater. So can you just kind of enlighten him on what Russ brings to the team and why you guarantee them to make the playoffs?
Well, listen, I don't understand how anybody can be a Russell Westbrook hater because, and let me say this, you know, people like, well, he just gets stats. I'm like, yeah, but the difference is, you know, when people talk about his triple doubles, all those other guys get triple doubles. They get like 12 points, 15 points, 11 assists,
yeah,
and 11 rebounds. And so we showed a stat the other night where Russell averaged 17 assists and 20 rebounds against the Pacers. I'm like, damn, he averaged like 25, 27 points, but he averaged like 18 assists and 20 rebounds. I'm like, that is crazy. I mean, but the thing I admire about him, first of all, I've never seen a guy play that hard every single night. And in this era of quote unquote low management, which is the stupidest in the world, yo, man, you get paid to play, and that drives me crazy. Like, I never in my wildest dreams, thinking about my 16 years in the NBA, be like, I'm just gonna take a night off tonight. I'm like, nah, dude, they're paying you to play, and so that's one of the reasons I really admire Russell. He never cheats you. Now, is he a perfect player? Not even close. But if I'm a fan and fans say, I want my guys to give me everything they got every night, and Russell Westbrook is the perfect epitome of, I'm going to give you everything I got every night. I'm going to make some mistakes. I'm going to do some things wrong, but I'm going to bust my ass every single night. And you like, hey, as a fan, that's all I can ask. Because think about it. If you're a real fan, you want, if you like your favorite player and 5 nights a year, he just said, hey, I'm just load managing. Freaking nuts.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, look, I know he's a great player. I just think it's funny because LeBron, it was always, oh, no, of course he gets to the finals. He's in the East. Russell Westbrook, it's like he's being celebrated for getting the 8 seed. Meanwhile, my man, Chris Paul, goes to the West, a team that hadn't made the playoffs in more than a decade, and they're the 2 seed. So I want to ask you about him and also, do you have any allegiance still to the Suns having played there, or is that too far in the past? Or what do you think about their chances, and who's your NBA pick, I guess?
Well, number one, my two allegiances are to the Phoenix Suns and to the 76ers. I want to see both of them do well.
Okay, good.
Yo, as far as the championship, I got no idea. And I said that on our show. This is, to me, like, I got no idea. I said, I know it's going to be one of the three. It's going to be Milwaukee, Brooklyn, or Philly. But I got zero idea who's going to win among those three. Like, it's crazy. I think Philly got a huge advantage. They only got to beat one of those teams.
Right.
But my pick is Milwaukee in the East.
Okay.
Yeah. The West. The West is crazy. I will tell you one thing I feel bad about. I feel bad about my Phoenix Suns because, yeah, you know, normally you're the number 2 seed. You get an easy first-round opponent.
Right.
And they are not getting an easy first-round opponent. Actually, I picked the Lakers to beat them. I think they got screwed by the system.
Yep.
I do. I mean, I get paid to pick, so
– yeah.
I'm picking the Lakers to win that series. So it's going to be unfortunate. But like I said, you want to see the Suns win.
Okay.
And I don't think they're going to be able to beat the Lakers. I really don't.
I agree. So this will probably run like next week. So this will be funny to ask you for, who do you think is going to win this PGA? I know you said before it's hard to pick golf tournaments, but we're 36 holes in. And who are you rooting for? Who do you think might pull
out? I always root for Phil because he's a good friend.
Sure.
My pick is Louis Oosthuizen.
Okay. All right. We'll hold it.
Because I think that, man, first of all, you know, there's certain guys that you're like, I could watch them swing a golf club.
Mm-hmm.
Long. You know, you talk about Oosthuizen, you talk about Adam Scott. You know, my favorite player is Tim Petrovic. I got a chance to meet him last week at the Regents Tournament at my course in Alabama. But I'm like, damn. Like, there's certain guys you want to watch swing a golf club.
Mm-hmm.
And Louis is one of those guys. I mean, it's just like, and the thing is weird, first, all these guys are little which is very annoying. And I like, and they like, you play with them and they just hit the ball so damn far. Yeah. You're like, how does this little hit the ball that far? I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Watching these little guys, you know, because it's so funny. When I play with Tiger all the time and he'd come to the house, my friend's like, you know, man, this dude's like, because he looks like he's like 6'2", 6'3", on television. I said, that's only because the rest of them little dudes like 5'7", 5'8".
Right.
But Tiger's only like 5'10". They're like, I can't believe how this dude's not that big.
Right.
So it was always funny and hilarious. They're like, I mean, I thought he's like 6'2", 6'3". I don't know, dude. The rest of them dudes like 5'7", 5'8", 5'9". He just looks tall because he's taller and leaner, but he's only like 5'10", 5'11", at the most.
Just lastly, you know, and you got in a little announcing of golf with the match before you played in it. Would you ever see yourself doing a little more golf, or would that take you away from the course too much?
Well, I mean, I would do special events, but yeah. Say, yo, man, I want to play golf. I don't want to talk about it. You know, so, you know, that was really fun for me because I know Tom a little bit, the GOAT, and I've known Peyton a long time, and that was fun. And obviously Tiger and Phil, but like I say, I'd rather play than deal, like just be out there just talking about golf. I want to play in.
Right. Well, you're going to get a lot more chance to play, obviously, now with a great swing. We're excited to see you back out there. Bo Jackson gave you that big hug. I feel like everybody was so excited to see it. So keep it up, man. Thank you so much for
no
doing
No problem,
it.
My brother. Thank you guys for having me. You guys have a great week.
Thank you, Charles.
Got it, man.
All right, brother. Y'all be safe.
Appreciate it.
Thanks to Charles Barkley for that incredible interview. Before we get into our breakdown of the Charles Schwab, though, I want to highlight a couple nice odds boosts that William Hill has this week. Tony Finau, coming off a T8 at the PGA Championship. He came close to winning here at Colonial in the past when Kevin Na won. His odds are boosted up to 25-1 this week. And Gary Woodland, who also had a great couple of days at the PGA before fading a bit on Sunday, his odds are boosted up to 45-1 at William Hill. So for more info on these odds boosts, and some of the other bets William Hill has this week, go to williamhill.com. And remember, if you're in a state where William Hill is available to you, use the promo code GolfDigestRF as a new user for a juicy signup bonus. Again, GolfDigestRF for that juicy signup bonus. Go check it out. Here's the rest of our episode.
All right. We want to thank Charles Barkley once again for joining us. That was a lot of fun.
I will never forgive myself for not being on that Zoom call. I was too busy.
And it was crazy because it went back and forth, Steve. Yeah. It was going to be you, and then it was going to be Chris, based on, you know, playing golf or this or that. You know, it was a Saturday interview, so it was tough. But I know that was the one that we all would have wanted to do.
Yeah, I wish we had it. I wish we had him today because he would appreciate this. And I just remembered this. A lot of our listeners would appreciate it. Anybody who's been to Las Vegas would appreciate it. I did calculate my best for the week, and I made $1.67.
With your top 10 all in, and stuff, you
all in, and what returned, I made $1.67. So I came out in the green.
That's all that matters.
Wow, that's amazing. You know, it's funny because he kind of didn't directly, because he doesn't really know us, but take a shot at us, because he right away says betting on golf is just the dumbest thing ever. And this is a guy who loves to bet. So, you know, I mean, it kind of, that speaks to his point, but at least you came out a little ahead, but that's a lot of effort to make a dollar. So
20 bets for a dollar. So we'll take it.
Yeah. All right. Well, we move on another week. You know, it's not a major, it's not going to be Phil Mickelson making history, but it is a tournament that made a bit of history last year, though we've kind of forgotten about it. The Charles Schwab Challenge was the first event of the restart last year. That was when we were kind of like, oh, the winner of this is going to be remembered forever. And Daniel Berger won, and literally nobody remembers that now, because we've played five majors since. I think we were like, it's like we didn't think that golf was ever going to come back or something. Anyway, we got the Charles Schwab Challenge, and you know, Steve, obviously it used to be known as simply, or a lot of people still call it Colonial, based on the course that it's at. So first, give us a little breakdown of the course, and then we'll get into some of the favorites.
Yeah, it's fitting that it's the Chuck Schwab challenge, and we had Chuck Barkley on the pod this week. So, yeah, I mean, it was such a good field last year and still a pretty good one, at least at the top of the board this year. We'll get into the field in a bit, just a little on the course, because I know everyone's familiar with Colonial Country Club. Fort Worth, Texas, you know, has hosted a PGA Tour event since 1946. So a ton of history here, and that's always great for handicapping purposes. But I think the interesting thing, and, you know, 7,209 yards, par 70. But in terms of who plays well here, it's definitely a mixed bag. And that kind of speaks to, you know, the type of course it is. And it just rewards good golf and, you know, tends to be a hot putter who ends up winning. Our guy, Steve Bamford, who does a great job with the course breakdowns. He made the point that the last five winners have all ranked in the top 10 strokes gained putting. And even some guys, you know, who you wouldn't necessarily expect. So, you know, and Morikawa was up there. He was in the mix. He had a good putting week. He lost to the playoff last year to Berger. Berger was in the top 10 of strokes gained putting that week. But, you know, we've had winners like Kevin Kisner, Kevin Na a couple of years ago. And then Jordan Spieth, who, you know, in 2016, when he was just one of the best players. So I don't think there's necessarily a set skill set to playing well here, but you know, you might look at strokes gained total recent to see who's playing the best. And you know, definitely a ball strikers venue. You know, this was one of Ben Hogan's alleys, so you know, known as being a premier ball striking course. But you do need to get a hot putter on these bent grass greens. It's known for the rough being pretty long, according to the GCSAA. We got 3-inch rough this week and Bermuda grass. So, you know, you never really know what to expect coming out of the Bermuda grass. So I think a little familiarity with that will definitely help. And I think the last thing to look at is going to be the wind, which, you know, some years we don't get a lot of wind here, but that, you know, that's typical of a Texas course that you got to play really well in the wind. So, you know, looking at guys who do play well in Texas typically, and also play well in the wind, because I think at current forecast, Thursday is supposed to be a little gusty, up to 20, 25 miles per hour. So, you know, kind of a similar thing that we saw at Kiowa. And, you know, that definitely made it interesting. I think that will this week too. So that's your course breakdown.
All right. Well, here's our favorites breakdown, courtesy of William Hill. We start with Jordan Spieth, the favorite at 11-1, followed by Justin Thomas, 14-1, Colin Morikawa, 14-1, Abe Anser, who the red hot Abe Anser, nice little 65. I believe that was the low round of the tournament at Kiowa to have a nice finish there, 20-1, and defending champ Daniel Berger, 20-1. And then I'll give you two more guys, Tony Finau, 22-1, and Patrick Reed, 22-1. So CP, start with you. I know this is not your area usually to take someone, but is anyone calling your name this week?
No, not in this range. And I can make good case against all of them, except Spieth. He's red hot and obviously can, after he did with the putter last week, that could obviously flip very quickly. But as for Thomas, I mean, the putter has been so bad for such a long period of time now that it's kind of impossible to bet him no matter how well he hits it. Morikawa, the putter wasn't great last week either. Anser, you could, you know, I love to bet on Abraham Anser, but 20-1, I think a lot of people are going to get suckered into him off that, you know, I'm trying to say this nicely, but a fraudulent kind of backdoor top 10 at Kiowa. But I mean, we love Abe. He was an incredible guest on the podcast. I root for Abraham Anser. He's one of my favorite players on tour, but he should be 40-1 just based off of the fact that he has yet to win. And I know he's come close a bunch of times, but this is a pretty strong field. Like Steve said, it's surprisingly off a major. You know, Phil's coming to play because he made a commitment. Spieth's coming. Justin Thomas, I'm surprised by. So it's a pretty strong field, and Abraham Anser being the fourth favorite in this strong of a field is not, you know, just doesn't seem right. Berger, defending champion, rough week last week. I think he kind of got it together though on the weekend. I'm not betting Tony Finau. Reed, you can make a great case for, obviously, with a short game around this place. But I'm going, you didn't mention him, we didn't get to him. I'm just going to chase the Will Zalatoris win. I think he's hitting the ball so well, tee to green, approach game strong. Putter's terrible. I know where I just said I'm not betting on bad putters, but hopefully we can get it to flip with Willie Z. And he's, you know, he seems very close to that breakthrough win. And 25-1, you know, it's still pretty good. So I'm happy to kind of just chase this Zalatoris win until he gets under 20-1 without a win, which doesn't seem to be the case. He's been at 25-30-1 kind of every week. So I'll chase it around until it happens.
Can't fault anyone for chasing the Zalatoris win. I could be convinced too. I'm going to chase the guy who you said is probably a sucker bet. I've already bet Abraham Answer, got him elsewhere at 22-1. Like you said, he probably should be about 30-1 in that typical range where he's at. But, you know, I think the books are a little scared of, you know, this recent form, and call it a fraudulent top 10 if you want, but it's his third straight top 10 coming into this, and, you know, playing well at all types of courses. Quail Hollow, which you would not think fits his game, you know, came up just shy there. I look at the last 24 rounds at Fantasy National. Abe is second strokes gain total, so just playing amazing. He's actually first in strokes gain off the tee, which again, you wouldn't think his answer is strong suit, but, you know, he's just been super consistent and keeping it in the fairway, which I think is going to be really key. Like I said, that 3-inch rough here. So I think that gives him a chance. I don't want to miss out on the Abe win. So I'm going to make that my spicy nug that this is the week that Abraham Answer gets that elusive first win. He's playing too well not to. He's doing everything in every category well. He's even 17th in strokes gained putting the last 24 rounds, 13th in strokes gained approach. Like I said, the ball striking has been so good. So I do think Answer, this is a good chance for him. It's a short course. You know, we see recent form also portend success here. So I'm on Answer. I'm also tempted by Morikawa. 14-1 is not a great number, but just given how well he's been playing, he's fourth strokes gained total the last 24 rounds, Fantasy National. He's first in strokes gained approach, which is what we see from him always, and first in tee to green strokes gained. So it's the putter that needs to light up. And when it does, you know, when he's decent putting, that's when he has a chance to win. And, you know, I think being here where he was a runner up last year, had a great chance to win. You know, had that bad chip in the playoff there against Berger, or else, you know, he could have got it done. So I think Morikawa is going to have a ton of confidence coming into this week. And the last guy I'm tempted by, obviously Spieth, you know, 11-1 isn't great, but, you know, could totally see him winning here. But Patrick Reed at double that number, 22-1 at William Hill. You know, he had the best weekend out of anybody at Kiowa. And I think that kind of went under the radar, as Rick Gaiman made the point in our DFS column this week. And Reed was, you know, big for me winning my pool. And his record at Colonial, he's never missed a cut in four tries, finished T7 last year. And I think that's because, you know, these greens are not so big. They're about 5,000 square feet on average. So, you know, that scrambling is going to be clutch. And if he strikes the ball like he did on the weekend, I think he's got a great chance. So, you know, him and Answer were my two guys who won me the pool last week and in Gordon's pool. So I'm just going to ride both those hot hands this week.
All right. Getting into the next wave of guys, it's kind of amazing. Every one of these guys, except for Brian Harman, I believe we saw at some point at Kiowa, start with pop up on the board. That is Joaquin Niemann, 25-1. Will Zalatoris, as we mentioned, 25-1. Corey Connors, the first round leader, 25-1. Scotty Scheffler made a run, 25-1. Sung Jae-im made a run, 28-1. Justin Rose, 28-1. Brian Harman, 33-1. Charlie Hoffman was in the mix. Where the hell is Charlie Hoffman? 35-1. Gary Woodland, 45-1. So all these guys are not only in this kind of sweet spot that we usually look at, but they're coming off a solid week at a major. Steve, I'll kick it back to you. Who in that group is jumping out at you?
Yeah, I guess Charlie Hoffman, just given how he tends to play really well in Texas, and he's been playing so great the last, you know, since really the start of this year. He's third in strokes gained approach out of anyone in the field since 2021 per Rick Gehman's database. So, you know, I think it's just a matter of time for him. He had a solid week last week. He finished, you know, T17, but had the fourth best score if you just look Friday to Sunday. Again, Rick Gehman makes that point in our DFS article. Everyone should go read it, golfdigest.com. But he's been consistent. The number, certainly not great, 35-1. So I haven't pulled the trigger yet. In terms of the other guys, I kind of think you're sort of chasing, given those numbers aren't great. You know, Scheffler, we expect him to get it done eventually. He did have a decent weekend. Same with Justin Rose, obviously. But if you look at Rose, that was all putting. I think he gained like 11 strokes putting Sunday alone, which is like one of the best rounds putting strokes gain wise in the past 5 years. So I think you're kind of chasing fool's gold with Rose. I don't know if Powers is going back to him given you know, his take on Rose last week, but out of the guys 35 and below, you know, I'm making a bet on Answer and Reed. So I'm going to go light in this range.
Rose and Hoff, another perfect example of just how crazy last week was. Rose was like whatever he was, 5 under through 10. And I mean, he could have really actually posted 4 under. And then I think he hit it in the water. Same with Cantlay. Like the second, you know, the cameras show up and they get a little close to like seriously threatening, they kind of rinse one. And that's what he did at whatever that hole was, 13, with the water on the right, still managed the top 10. And then Charlie Hoffman, like you said, for people forget he was in that Eric Van Rooyen group Friday night. I almost fell out of my chair when that one video of Matt Wallace's caddy snubbed Van Rooyen, and then it popped up that Charlie Hoffman was like 2 under. I was like, where the hell? I didn't see a shot from him like any of the first 36 holes. And he kind of built on that on the weekend. So that was nice to see too. I'm not on Hoffman or Rose. I am on Neiman. Great start to the year, obviously back-to-back seconds in Hawaii. I actually bet at 30-1 on William Hill yesterday, and it's already down to 25 along with Zalatoris. He's kind of went through a lull after that back-to-back runner-up stretch in Hawaii, but he's kind of popped back up. 8th at Valspar, 18th at Wells Fargo, was in one of the final groups Saturday at Kiowa and kind of faded on Sunday. I think he shot a 76, so faded to 30th. But pretty decent history at Colonial, 8th here in 2018. Then he's made the last two cuts. Irons are elite right now. The putter is actually really hot right now for Neiman, so hopefully he can keep that rolling. The driver's hot as well. We're just going to need him to save some pars around the greens when he does miss a green, which doesn't happen often the way he hits his irons. So he did have a, you know, nice week around the greens at Valspar and finished 8th. So if he can just, when he does miss the green, save par, I think you'll see him contend this week. So I love Neiman.
All right, let's get into the next wave of guys. I'm seeing, there we go. Reigning PGA champion Phil Mickelson is at 50-1. And I think we saw his odds kind of move to that as well for the upcoming US Open. So, you know, people aren't going too crazy adjusting the Phil odds. Keep in mind, this was a guy who didn't have a single top 20 finish entering the week at the Ocean Course, but still great to see him out there. We've seen him pull it off. Some magic at Colonial through the years. He's 50-1. Chris Kirk, 55-1. Kevin Streelman, who made a run at Kiowa before fading late. He did pick up his first career top 10 at a major, barely, but he did. He's 55-1. Billy Horschel, 55-1. Matt Wallace, 55-1. You mentioned his caddy. Sergio, 55-1. Nah, 55-1. So a lot of, you know, it's a pretty solid field here, especially considering it's the week after a major and the guys had to come from South Carolina back to Texas. But who in that next range, you know, Chris, I'll go to you, is jumping out. Oh, I see Brandon Grace down here at 70-1. That seems like pretty good value.
It does. Not a spicy nug, but kind of a predictable nug. Phil Mickelson missed the cut this week. I'll go with that. I can't imagine he's had his usual fasting routine this week and kind of sticking to the diet and working as hard. I mean, that had to be the most emotionally, physically draining day he's had in months. So, you know, if he could shock us and, you know, make the cut and maybe even contend again, but I don't see it. I think he's going to show up for the 2 days because he committed, and that's kind of how Phil is. And, you know, slam the trunk and get the hell out of here and get ready for Torrey Pines, which he's going to devote all his energy to next, obviously. I am on Kirk just because Chris Kirk, Georgia Bulldog, Steve and I have bet him a bunch of times this year. He's had a great year.
Yes, you have.
Good year. His last PGA Tour win was here in 2015. People forget. And that was after he had that rough week at the Players, I believe, and then kind of won the next week, bounced back. So I'm just going to try and bet on this Chris Kirk coronation. Little guy named Jordan Spieth finished runner-up that year in 2015, along with Brant Snedeker and Jason Bone. So that was quite a time to be alive in 2015. So, yeah, I'm definitely going to try and hit on this Kirk coronation.
Yeah, I think I'll probably follow you with Kirk 55-1. Pretty good number. I've bet him lower than that. I think he was 25 or 30-1 at the Valero and was on him there. So I think 55-1 is decent. I'm with you on Phil. Not going there. I think just too much to expect to go back to back, and that's not where his focus probably is. Someone just below Phil, I don't know if you mentioned him yet, Myers, but Jason Kokrak at 45-1 definitely has my interest. He's been, if you look the last 24 rounds, he's been putting as well as anyone. He's in the top 10 strokes gained putting per Fantasy National. And, you know, you look at the recent form, you know, hasn't missed a cut in all of 2021. And the ball striking numbers have been really good. You know, he just needs to kind of put it together. He did lose strokes off the tee at the PGA, but, you know, still made the cut. And what we see from Kokrak is his off the tee game is elite. It was the first time he lost strokes off the tee since Sony. And the approach game he's gained in the last 4 weeks. So I think given the putter's been red hot. He hasn't gained less than 3 strokes since the Arnold Palmer, and he finished 8th there. And he's, I think, not getting a ton of credit because he hasn't had really great finishes in the majors. He finished 49th at both the Masters and the PGA, but so that's why I think there's some value there at 45-1, you know, just a ball strikers course. And that's what Kokrak's known for. And I think in that same vein, Matt Wallace, you know, you could have got him double these odds last week. So probably won't be as attractive to some, but 55-1, you know, he's ball striking wise, you know, he's going to be there. He's gained so many strokes, tee to green, the last 5 events going back to Valero where, you know, you really should have won. But I look at the putter's kind of what has held Wallace back, you know, again at the Valero. But he's actually gained strokes the last 2 rounds when he finished 6th at Wells Fargo, and he gained last week at the PGA. So, you know, if he could just gain about 2 strokes putting, I think the ball striking will have him in it. So that's pretty tempting on Matt Wallace. I think it'd be fitting if he paid off this really good form with a win. So tempted by that 55-1 number.
All right. Let's get into some long shots, maybe some DFS plays here. You know, Harry Higgs coming off a T4. He's there at 100-1 odds. Kevin Kisner, 80-1. I mean, you think this
he should be 500-1 right now.
Well, he is terrible. How about Westy's Last Stand, 80-1. Matthew Neesmith, 90. Taylor Gooch, 100. Peter Uihlein, 100. Any long shots you guys are liking? And how about any DFS plays?
Love Gooch, 100-1. He's made 7 of his last 8 cuts, 3 top 26 finishes during that stretch. He's gained on approach in 4 of his last 6, which is not usually his strong suit. But when he does lose on approach, his short game saves him. So that he's going to need that this week. I like that 100-1 number on Gooch. Harold Varner III, we didn't mention, 66-1. I think he was the first round leader here last year.
Yeah, I cashed that. That's right.
You did. That's right. That's probably why I remember it. 66-1, second at Harbortown. I've you know, the actual experts on social media have kind of said that's a comp course, Harbortown, small greens. So HV3, okay week at the PGA. I think he gained in every area except putting. So let's just hope that flips. Maverick McNealy is 160-1, MC'd. Sorry, missed the cut last week, but he had a good second round. I know that because I was following it, because I made a secret bet on him to win the PGA for some reason. So I'm going to do that again this week, but it's not going to be a secret. 160-1, fourth at RBC Heritage. I just said Harbortown, second at Pebble. Look, Pebble's not a comparable course to Colonial, but the greens are small. I think it's just a Maverick McNealy type course where he can kind of putt his way to victory. Steve said the putters, you know, you have to have a hot putter this week, and McNealy might be one of the three or four best putters in this field. So we'll try and hit on McNealy. And then last, way down the board, I'm sure Steve's on this guy too. At 175-1 is Doc Redman, who finished ninth at the Byron Nelson, looked like his fall season self. And when he was playing well, he got down to like 35-40-1 in some weaker fields. This is a little bit of a stronger field, but if he shows up with his Byron Nelson game that he had, I love Doc Redman, 175-1.
Definitely on Redman. Finished ninth, like you said, at the Byron Nelson, and the putter has started to heat back up, which, like I said, I think is going to be important to winning here and, you know, gain a bunch of strokes off the tee on approach. I think it was probably an advantage to someone like him to not play at the PGA Championship. So he's a little well rested. I always like that. So, I think DFS wise, that's a good play. He's 7,200 on DraftKings. So I think he's interesting in terms of outrights. I think Cam Tringali too, had a really good Thursday at Kiawa and then obviously imploded, but it was really across four or five holes. You know, he had, I think, a 10 on a hole. He was like 13 over. I think he made the turn in 48 or something like that on Friday. He just, you know, a couple blow up holes really cost him. And, you know, now you're getting him at 60-1, probably because of how poorly he played on Friday, because his odds, you know, before that in some of these weaker fields were down to 30-1, 35-1. So, you know, 60-1, I think is decent. I think I could be tempted by that. Matt Jones is also someone who's been playing really good golf. We saw him play decent at Kiawa, made the cut. He's 12th in strokes gained total the last 24 rounds. He's also third in around the green, 19th strokes gained putting. So, you know, he kind of is doing everything well at the moment. The irons are a little shaky. He's 78th in this field in approach play, but, you know, the short game could kind of bail him out. And he's been good off the tee. We saw that at the Honda, obviously, when he won. So 7,800 on DraftKings, I think that's pretty decent price. Peter Uihlein, also someone who I think is interesting, probably not an outright bet. He's 100-1 at William Hill, but, you know, he's been playing really good golf. Let's see what he is at DraftKings. He's 7,500. So again, that's a step up in price. You know, we've seen him more so in the lower 7,000s recently, but he has a good history at Colonial. I think he's got at least one top 10 here. So yeah, I could be tempted by that in terms of DraftKings. And then Brennan Grace, you mentioned him, Myers. I think that's definitely interesting because the putter has been good. 22nd in strokes gained putting the last 24 rounds, which, you know, we know he could get that hot putter and go super low. So he might be a candidate, you know, first round leader type bet. And I think on DraftKings is good value at 7,500 compared to some of these other guys in that range. He's pretty interesting to me as well. Some longer shots. I mean, Luke List, he's been playing really good golf. See, Rick Gaiman makes the point in his column. He's gained strokes off the tee in 12 of his 13 starts in 2021, which is, you know, going to give you a chance to do well at Colonial. So, you know, he just needs kind of a decent putter to return value at 6,900 on DraftKings. So that's pretty interesting. And Vincent Whaley, who has been a DFS darling, he's, you know, made nine straight cuts he's $6,200. So really all you need is that made cut, which he's done. And in his past seven starts, he's finished between 26th and 36th place, which, you know, if he does that, that's definitely return on your money. So and the last guy I think's worth mentioning is Matt Kuchar. It was just a really long course for Kuchar at the PGA. I think some people might've got burned for playing Kuch and, you know, missed the cut by a lot, but you know, we've seen his ball striking definitely return. His driver is now decent. He's gained in approach and off the tee. So, and made that deep run at the match play, bunch of top 20s, two of them in Texas at Valero and Byron Nelson. So, you know, he's in that 7,000 range. He's at 7,600. So, I'll probably be playing Kuch, which is not something I could say that I've played Kuch, you know, in about 3 or 4 years. So, those are my DFS takes.
All right. Very good. Well, you know, should be another fun week. No doubt about it. Be interesting to see what Phil does. We want to thank everyone for listening. Thank our producer, Liam Byrne. Thanks to Charles Barkley for joining us. Thanks to CP for throwing me under the bus with Charles Barkley and telling him I'm a Russell Westbrook hater. Thank all those people.
Go Wiz.
Please.
Are they still in it? I'm not even paying attention.
Oh, yeah, they're Sixers, in it. Right? They lost the first game. They're in it, though.
All right.
Whatever.
he made some good points.
I mean, again, yeah. Congrats. They made the playoffs in the East.
Hey, we celebrate that now in today's sports world. The bare minimum. By the way, first round leader, I'm just going to say it so it's documented and I've been hot on this. Troy Merritt is the first round leader bet this week at 100-1.
Boom. And you are the first round leader whisperer. So keep it going there. All right. So you got one more sneaky pick in there. Anyway, thanks again to everybody. Reminder, please subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts and leave a nice review or even some constructive criticism. Someone said I needed a new mic. I got a new mic this week. So we're listening.
Let's hear your review this now, buddy.
Yeah. Let's hear that. Yeah, exactly. So anyway, thanks again for listening, everybody. Check back next week when we see how much more money Stevie won. All right. See you next week.